Want to immerse yourself in sport and the stories of athletes from across the Pacific? Well, join me, Sam Wykes, alongside some of the most talented journalists and sports commentators from across the region for Fresh Off the Field. Each week, we'll also bring you interviews with Pacific athletes leaving their mark on the international stage and those aspiring to do the same. From cricket to netball, athletics to football, and everything in between. Listen to Fresh Off the Field on your favourite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Chinidal Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Kia ora and welcome everyone to Nijan Footy. We're back for 2026. If this is your first time listening, Nijan Footy is the number one place for Pacifica footy news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union worlds. My name is Tiniro Aruna and my koi is the one and only Sammy Wykes. Welcome back. Another big year ahead, my brother.
Yes, T, it is great to be back. We are going again, and my lord alay to all of our listeners from around the Pacific. Hey, another big year ahead of us. Rugby league, rugby union. Looking forward to round one for both those codes, but this is our round one for radio for 2026. Big show plan, T. We've got, we'll hear about your Cook Island trip. How good. It looked amazing over there.
Yeah, I've only been back for a day and a half. Still holding my tan from the Cook Island. So
you're looking, you're glowing. Look beautiful. And that's when you
wish
say,
I could say the same
for
back.
Me. Say it back, son. But some rugby league potential rule changes we'll be discussing in this show.
Proposed rule changes from the NRL. We'll
interesting changes there.
Through a few of them. And there's some big signing news across the NRL with a few of our Pacifica players. So plenty of news to come with rugby league. What do we got for rugby union?
I'm thinking was the round one is very close. It's about a month away between, it's probably the Carver Bowl actually, between Moana Pacifica and the Fijian Drua, which I'll be over there in Fiji.
Of course you will be.
So the junket, the trips are starting up again. Looking forward to that. But I thought we'll just have a look at some of the leadership around both teams, especially with some of their big leaders playing in Japan now, so they won't be part of those two teams. So I thought we'll look at that and just talk about
what that looks like.
What that looks like, as well as the feeling of coming back to preseason training post Christmas. So I think that's a big one. So we've got some insight on that. And our guest today, I thought we'll start in rugby union, PNG speedster Aidan Towa. He's born in Port Moresby. He's had over 50 caps in Super Rugby. He's played in Japan. And a fun fact, one of the fastest players in Super Rugby during the mid-2000s. So he'll be on the show later on.
Moment of the week.
Yes, we're going to start with our moment of the week. But since we've been off for a few weeks, T, I thought let's go our moments over our break. And I'm just going to call your one straight away. I just want to go straight to the Cook Islands.
We're going straight there.
Straight there because I was jealous and I was looking at all the photos, the crystal clear water, the food that you were eating. Talk us through it. How good was your trip?
Yeah, look, I got to spend 2 weeks in the motherland of Rarotonga. Got to take my family there, my wife, my two kids, and also my brother, his family, my cousins, Tupo Sopoanga, his family went. We went for my auntie's unveiling. So that was a special moment where a lot of our family got to come together at the family home of the village of Matavera. And it was a very special trip for me because the reason why I wanted to go for so long, I wanted my kids to connect to our culture and the people, our land. But we got to do some pretty cool things like spearfishing. My cousin took me, he's a local there, he took me spearfishing in one of the channels. So we got to go catch fish, bring them home.
Who got the biggest fish out of the family?
I actually caught this
because you're competitive. Of course, it had to be
a big one. I come up and I was like, "Yeah, I caught it." 2 minutes later, I see Tupo just swimming over. He goes in the same area and he caught the same fish, and it was about 2 centimeters longer than my one. So he just won that one. But we got to, my dad and my cousin gutted them, and then my mum put them in flour, fried them. So we ate that for dinner. We swam with turtles. You know, they're just a very magical creature to be able to swim with turtles on the island. We ran a lap around the island, which was just over 31 kilometers. During that run, I broke my phone due to sweat damage, so I was off the grid for a week. Not only did we run around the island, me and my family also walked over the island. So we done a big hike, a 3-hour hike over the Needle, went over the island from one end to the other. But yeah, like I said earlier, the most special part was to see my sons connect to the culture. You know, they got to be a part of the preparations of the pigs, where
from start to finish
to the cooking part. So yeah, that was quite a special experience for them. And yeah, they got to husk coconuts, ride scooters.
Hang on, before you go to that husking of the coconuts, from scene start to finish of, I guess, the way the pig is prepared and ready to be eaten, are they eating pig after scene and witnessing what goes on?
No, so my uncle wanted to make his version of black pudding. So that's, you know, involves the pig's blood. And my son had to actually hold the bucket while the blood was going in and then cut all the organs up for the black pudding. So 2 days later, we have a breakfast burger, and he opens the burger and takes the bacon out and said, I'm never eating bacon again.
There you go.
No, it was a cool trip. I know we're probably going on a little bit more, but while we were over there, there was also the Nines in Paradise tournament. So the rugby league tournament held in Rarotonga. Local clubs like Tupapa Panthers, the Ngātangi Matawera Sea Eagles, and the Arirangi Bears were involved. But the reason why this one was special was because there was a team called TJ Dargan Memorial. Now, Troy Dargan was a Cook Island representative. He also played for the South Sydney Rabbitohs. In 2023, he passed away in the island of Otutaki. So they brought over, his family brought over a memorial team that also included Cook Island representative players like Brad Takarangi, Te Pai Moiroa, Vincent Rennie, and Stephen Masters. And they also managed to win the competition just on the weekend. So huge congratulations to that team.
With those type of names, no brainer. They were the heavy favourites.
They did have a draw to the Arirangi Bears in the competition. So,
shout out to the Arirangi Bears.
But yeah.
Before we move on from the Cook Island trip, when you think about that, what brought the biggest smile to your face? I know you mentioned your boys, but what was the one moment that brought the biggest smile there? Your dad was there as well.
Yeah, my dad. Probably just the people there. Yeah, my dad was born and grew up in Rarotonga, but to see the generous people, you know, I'd walk through and they were like, Aruna. And I was like, oh, hey. And then they were like, where's your dad? I'm like, oh, you're not asking me about me. You're asking me about my dad. But my dad's friends and family, they would come over, drop off, you know, local rugby league playing kits and food from the bakery, you know, always welcome in and saying hello and just checking in on the family. So the people were my highlight.
I thought you would have said the billboard and the stickers and being noticed on Nation Footy and stuff like that would have been the biggest smile.
That's the legend over there.
Perfect.
And your break, how was
it? Look, I'm just going to keep this short and sweet, very short and sweet. For those that don't know, I was in business with a Pilates studio for 6 months, sold it, got out of it because I realized in that 6 months that after 14 years of playing rugby union and talking about rugby union and loving rugby union, that I knew more about rugby union than Pilates. I decided then and there, it's not for me. So I actually picked up a gig coaching with Sydney Uni, First Colts, so they're under 20s. So I'll be coaching for them in the local.
And you sold the gym.
Sold the gym. That's it. So that's that's my aha
makes
moment.
Sense. I was wondering why you walked in with a bit more, looking a little bit more lighter.
Yeah,
you know, smiling off your phone for once. When you're the businessman, I couldn't get you off the phone, mate.
But
now
let's just say, look, it was a financial learning curve. We're still good. We're still here, living, breathing.
Biggest lesson you learned from that experience?
My wife is the biggest rock in our family. She has. Shout out to Moana, because without her, my head would have been in my hands for a lot longer. So crying, but she had my back and I'm forever grateful for her.
Kia rana, I'm Ruben Rennie, Cook Island I2 player. You're listening to Nijin Footy. Just a quick bonjour, je suis Ruben Rennie. Je joue pour les îles Cook. Merci pour votre temps. Merci pour votre soutien. Allez.
Merci. Oui.
Ruben Rennie.
Stop.
I wish I could translate that French, but yeah,
it sounded good. I'm sure he meant well, but
his brother Vincent Rennie was one of the players that played in the TJ Duggan Memorial team, and he scored the first try for their team straight under the sticks. Vincent did so.
Beautiful.
So this is our part where we will update everyone on rugby league and rugby union news. We said earlier about the rule changes or the proposed rule changes from the NRL. I wanted to go through a couple of them and see what your thoughts were. So the first one would be the team that concedes a try, you know,
I
score against you.
No, I scored against you.
I scored against you. Okay, you score against me. So I'm the defending team. You score against me. Now I get to choose whether I want to kick off or I receive the ball. So
you get to choose.
The current rule is the defending team has to kick off.
Yep.
So the team that scores a try will always receive. But now they've proposed that this rule be changed where the defending team gets to choose. Now, it's been confirmed that all NRL clubs are against this rule change.
Every single one.
Well, I think because of the timing of it. Like, the public and the clubs would have only known about this proposed rule change, you know, just before New Year's, where everyone's a break.
PR stunt from rugby league trying to stay relevant. That's all they're trying to do.
Good point. But when you think about this rule change, if you were the defending team, what would you do in this case?
It's a good question.
Would you kick off? Would you receive?
Well, when I think about it, obviously you're trying to, it'll be determined on how far behind you are and stuff like that as well. If you want to waste time, because they're trying to do it to stop the momentums, the swing of possession. So like if we look at the American sport, basketball, you score, then the other team gets the ball. So it's an equal amount of possession to be able to close the gap with the scores. But again, I don't know what I would do, actually. I think I'd like to kick off. I think I'd always like to kick off, but...
So you've just conceded a try. You're behind. You would want to kick the ball off and keep it what the rule is now.
I just think with, say, in rugby union, in the sevens, the team that scores, they kick off. So it'd be the other team deciding.
See, this is the problem, mate. You haven't been in the washing machine.
Yeah.
You haven't been in the middle where you have to defend.
I know, but I'm thinking, does that encourage the short kickoff a bit more to be able to get possession back? Because it becomes a 50-50 contest.
I'm always going for give me the ball because even when we do the captain's toss, I'll always tell our captain, receive. Because I just know that it means less energy spent running the ball than it is to defend six tackles. And if you're behind, you can try a trick play or you can, at least you've got control of the ball.
I don't know, but you know when they try, when in rugby union, when they trial new rules, they always start them down in like say the under-20s World Cup or the under-16s and stuff like that.
They've been proposed.
So they're going to trial them somewhere before they
should be trialed in New South Wales Cup before they do bring it to the NRL and to the top level game. But one of the other rules, six players on the bench instead of four, and the coach gets
the same amount of interchanges.
But once the fourth player has entered the field, once they've made that fourth out of the six, the other two no longer plays the game.
I like that rule. I really do, because then you can be really strategic on who you have on your bench. Might mean the end of maybe the utility player that can cover multiple positions, but I think with the amount of concussions that happen in a game, that could be a really good rule to be able to plug some holes where you need them during the game.
Putting my PA hat on, if you were one of the two players that didn't play and you're on matches, do you get your match payment?
I think you do. So more money needs to come to the game.
Or these discussions have to take place. But I think, tactically, it adds a different element to the coaches to be able to, can you play mind games with the other team?
Exactly.
And the last one, blue shirt restrictions.
Great rule.
We've seen over the last couple of years.
You don't need a coach on the field the whole time.
Where the blue shirt has been behind the attacking team, barking orders. Trying to manage that one. So I don't mind that rule. That's
a good rule. That should come in straight away. No potential rule change. That one should definitely come in.
There are a few more rules, but I thought these were the main ones.
Absolutely. So the likelihood of this going ahead, putting your RLPA hat on, the man in the know.
I think there's more discussions to take place with all stakeholders like the clubs and the players. And then, yeah, because they are proposed, nothing's been confirmed as of yet. So no one get too excited until we get some
Or too angry.
Yeah. But in other signing news, we've got some signing news here. Keon Kolomatangi has signed with the Dragons. He will move there at the end of this upcoming season, and he has signed for 5 years.
You're joking, the helicopter.
So the helicopter
ride worked.
Yep, and if you haven't heard our last episode, we mentioned how the Dragons...
I thought it was the stupidest idea ever. The Dragons sent a
helicopter to pick up Keon at the wherever he lives, in South Sydney.
And from his backyard.
He flew down to Wollongong. Which is, how long would that be? About a half an hour.
Maybe even less, yeah, about a half hour flight.
45-minute flight to the Dragons, and yeah, they managed to sign him for 5 years. So if you are recruiting, use a chopper,
use a helicopter. That'll do me, mate. Well played, Dragons.
And the Sea Eagles, Tommy Talau, or ex-Sea Eagle Tommy Talau, he has signed at the Sydney Roosters for this year. And then David Moali also... some late news from 2025. He will join the Storm for 1 year this year, and then he'll head over to the Manly Seagulls in 2027. I thought I'd finish off with some good news. Ali Katoa, he has returned to training. You know, he got the body moving.
I did see that on socials.
There's no expectation of him to, you know, return to play or, you know, get to that level. They're probably more focusing on his recovery.
Oh, that social connection, being a part of the group.
Being around his team and his squad.
Moving again, healthy. So
very special.
Great news.
Yeah, great news for everyone. And just a reminder, the NRL season will start in Vegas on March the 1st. Sammy, you reckon we'll get there?
I know you are. You're going again, selfishly.
I don't know.
Get us on the junket
with your mates. But the Cowboys will be playing the Knights and the Dragons will be taking on the Bulldogs. That round one game in Vegas. And then preseason games start in February 7th. All-Stars games for Indigenous versus the Maldives men and women is in New Zealand on February the 14th.
It's the same time as Super Rugby, actually, or Feb 13th, actually, for round one. But I'll be in Fiji Feb 14th. Perfect. But that's all you got time for, Rugby League? Go to Rugby Union?
We'll shift over to Union.
Let's go, my friend. Hey, I'm thinking, this is where I want to start with, pre-seasons. You know, you've got your before Christmas, but post-Christmas, when all the superstars come back and there's a bit more intensity, a bit more feel to the training sessions, what was it like for you when, say, those stars come back after Christmas and you got to rub shoulders with them and you're playing for positions now?
Yeah, there's definitely a shift in
energy. There is a shift, yes.
And it becomes more competitive because you are training for those positions, but the standard lifts as well.
Yeah, it does.
And comms lift, and you know, when those international players join after the Christmas break, they don't usually need much to prepare themselves for a season because they're hardened. So after a week or two, they're already ready to go, and it's pretty full on.
It's full on
physical, competitive, and very high quality.
I remember my first one at the Waratahs when the Wallabies came back. Contact drill. There's the Tafu Palota now. Again, 120 kilos. Wycliffe Balu, 120 kilos. Another guy named Ben Robinson, 120 kilos. My first carry had to be in between those three. Got absolutely folded.
It's also...
I closed my eyes and then just got folded.
And for those players that do come back, it's one where it's like they're reminding those kids, hey, I'm still that guy.
Yes, so that's very true.
All those physical contact sessions, they ain't holding back.
Nah, they're not. But I thought, yeah, look, we'll start there. And obviously in that preseason, your leaders come back. And I just saw with the Fijian Drua, their captains, Frank Lamani has been announced, and Temo Mayanavanua, big second rower since Davide Ikanivere is now over playing in Japan for Cannon. They've announced their captains. But it just got me thinking as well, with Ari Savea leaving, he's in Japan as well. there's got to be some new leaders for Moana Pacifica. I know you're not across all the names, but anyone that could spring to mind, you know, what would you be looking for in a leader when you lose a leader like Artie? Like, they're tough shoes to fill.
You know who the perfect leader would be?
Who?
Patrick Pellegrini. Oi, oi, don't laugh. Wow. Wow.
Oh, you smirked. Wow. You smirked.
I'm there going, what an opportunity.
Mate, he couldn't run a bar. No, I'm joking. Wow. I'm joking.
That's my leader right
Is
there.
Is that your leader?
Or the 10. He guides him around the park.
Nah. Well, do you know why I would say
controls the game.
His mind needs to be on just controlling the game, not trying to get the energy and read the room and make those decisions. Let him focus on footy.
Let's just remind our listeners that Patrick is also your first cousin.
My first cousin.
So he can speak to him about him like this.
Yes. Hey, he just needs to keep focusing on his footy.
Well, return serve, who would you think is the perfect leader to take over from Artie?
Tough decision because, as I said, Artie, there's only one Artie out there, but from a optics point of view, I'm thinking in the way that he finished the season, the way he grew in that probably leadership role, it's probably Miracle Failangi. I think him being from Samoa, the first player from the village of Samoa, I think Vailele in Samoa, to then play Super Rugby, I think he could be, if he's not the captain, he has to be part of
Is this inside knowledge? You already know that he's going to be captain?
No.
I'm just asking you the question.
No, I'm just thinking about it from...
Because I know what you're like. If you know something, then you plant the seed, then 2 weeks later you're like, I said it.
Don't do that to me. I just know footy and I know personalities. As I said, I sold the Pilates studio because I know footy more than Pilates. So I just think from the outside looking in, I think it'd be a very good story as well. I think he's got the passion, the pride,
And the people
and the runs on the board
and the players would listen to him.
Yeah, you
know, alongside Tana Umanga.
Exactly.
You know, when he speaks, they listen. Yeah. So.
And I think what Moana Pacifica is built on, it is the opportunity from players from the village. So I believe he would be a strong candidate.
And then the new big signing, ex-Warrior?
La Mape. Yeah, that's another good one. He could be in contention as well. I think he'd be a great leader. There's Augustine Bulu as well, the 9.
Yeah, ones with guys like him, you don't want to put that pressure on him being new to the team. You just want him to
play, unleash. Just do his thing.
You just go there, do your thing, and unleash.
Anyway, my money's on Miracle. Wink.
Well, my money's on Patrick Pellegrini.
But hopefully they do well. Round one, that happens Saturday, February 14th in Lautoka, the Sugar City. That will be the Battle of the Carver Bowl. Looking forward to that one. And then finally, Super Rugby celebrates 30 years by launching the search for the Legends 15. It's fan-driven. It will select the greatest ever rugby players from the 30 years of competition, which Nijin stars, because I know you will know a fair few, not the current day players, but back in the day players.
Tana Umanga.
Tana, yep. He'd be in my list, yep.
Have to be there. Ma'anonu.
He'd have to be. He's still going now.
Jonah played Super.
Yes.
Jonah
will be there, yep. He'd have to be there.
Do you reckon the majority would be New Zealand players, or they'd have a good mix between...
I reckon there'll be a good mix.
Who takes the 9?
That's a tough one. Will Genya comes to mind, but you've got George Gregan. You also got Aaron Smith.
Pity Weepu.
Old Pity Weepu. Who are the South African players too? Faf de Klerk.
The tall one with the long hair.
Oh, that's a great description.
There's a lock. He was the captain at one point.
Victor Matfield.
That's the one.
That's Victor. Yeah, Victor. He'll be in there for sure. But my one,
Kieran
my short
Reed.
Thing. Oh, Kieran Reed. Richie McCaw.
Brad Thorne,
Jerry Collins. T, I've just reread the rules. And as you know, I'm not really attention to detail type of guy. And I thought, hang on a tick, I better have a look at this again. And I just realised that it's only for the current teams that are in now. But there is a wild card entry from any of the teams that aren't in Super Rugby now. So Victor Matfield still could be in there, but it's from the current day teams.
So only one player from those South Africa.
Or Sunwolves.
Japan. Any Australian teams that used to play and no longer playing?
The Rebels, the Melbourne Rebels. So there could be a wild card from there.
But that would just be, those players would
have Yeah, they would have played for any other ones as well. But for me, Jerry Collins is my sure thing.
Jerry Collins,
number Jonah. 6. Jonah, another sure thing.
Dan Carter.
another sure thing. We've got to get the 15 now.
Yeah, and they're going to be all Blacks.
Yeah, probably. But we'll be looking out for those names when they do get announced. But, hey, we're going to go over to Aiden Toller because that will round up our rugby chat for today's episode.
Hi, I'm Tegan Hardigan, Bully Cooler Hooker, and you're listening to Nation Footy.
All right, T, first interview for 2026. I thought we'd start with a former rugby union speedster. I actually came up against him a few times, and as a forward, it was an absolute nightmare when you come up in the defensive line and you look up and you caught one-on-one with the fastest man in Super Rugby at the time. So a few nerves there, but he's played for the Queensland Reds during that golden era with the Brumbies. He's played over in Japan. Born in PNG, now living back in PNG, doing some amazing work with the Street Smart Initiative program. He joins us right now. Aiden Toller, hello, Geta. Welcome to Nijin Footy.
Morning, Thru Wakesy. Mate, thanks for having me on and really thankful for that kind introduction.
You were, before we get into the other stuff, as a speedster, what was your fastest 100-meter time, just to kick it off like that?
Oh, man, look, 100 meters, I never really timed myself over the 100, but the 40 meter, as you know, was a staple sort of testing distance for us in Super Rugby. And I think my quickest 40 meter time was 4.74 seconds.
Holy!
So I don't know what that converts to. That was when I was at the Brums. Yeah,
it converts to 1 second faster than me. That's what it converts to. Let's go with born and raised in PNG. Whereabouts is your village?
Yeah. Born and raised in Port Moresby at the Pontern Hospital. My dad is from Hunalbutta, affectionately known as the Big Village, which is just outside of Port Moresby. And my mum's side, they're a bit further down the coast, about 2.5 hour drive out of Port Moresby, a village called Hula. Beautiful on the water there. Central province, central boy. But yeah, my life growing up was in the city in Port Moresby.
What were some of your favorite memories of growing up in Port Moresby?
Man, I just have to say, just being with family. Growing up at my nana's house with, my dad's younger brothers was living there, and lots of cricket in the backyard. Not really rugby for me. It was mainly cricket and soccer growing up. And like my fondest memories, I think, when I look at my childhood, is just spending them at my nana's house.
And so there was a lot of cricket. Was there any footy being played when you were living in PNG?
No, bro. Rugby was really a foreign thing to me. I wasn't introduced to it until I came to Brisbane for boarding school. I didn't watch NRL. I know, obviously PNG's NRL crazy. It's the number one sport up there, but I didn't really know about rugby league. Rugby union a little bit. My uncles used to play in the local comp up there in Port Moresby for the Harlequins Club. And so I'd watched a couple of games there. But no, I didn't really know too much about it until I moved down south to school.
We will get to your football journey and where that started, but you mentioned boarding school. What was that, the process like from being a young kid, being raised in Port Moresby, and then, the decision from your parents to send you to boarding school?
Not just one boarding school, but probably one of the most prestigious boarding schools in Brisbane as well.
Yeah, Churchy. I've looked back on it, at different times throughout the last few years, and I never really, as you live through it, you just take it as it goes. It is what it is. But it was quite a daunting experience. I was lucky we had a couple of Papua New Guineans there, not too many, not somewhere like a Nudgee, but there were a couple. So there was that, I guess, element of comfort there, but it was just out of this world. I mean, going from Port Moresby into a school like Churchy, it was quite daunting. And, I was quite lucky that cricket's the term one sport, and it was something that I was quite good at. And it allowed me, I think, to settle in a lot quicker than I normally maybe would have, just because I was good at it. I ended up playing in the 13 A's after one or two games. And then I was just comfortable there. But I think about the move now, and there was lots to get used to. Homesick for a very long time, and back then it's not like you know, you could FaceTime and stuff with mum and dad, so could only get them on a few set times during the week. And yeah, it's a bit of a transition, but you know, at the same time, those 5 years boarding at Churchy were some of the best. I've got a little son now and can't wait to send him to boarding school. Not because I can't stand him at home, but because I want him to experience it.
There you go.
You mentioned cricket being a way of settling in and probably being accepted in the boarding school. Were there any other ways that helped you overcome some of those challenges of being homesick and, you know, moving from Port Moresby to Brisbane?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And Port was so crucial for me to help me fit in. I mean, you know, you come in as a young Papua New Guinean into this huge school, you know, where there are only a couple of dark faces, a couple of brown guys there. And so all you're trying to do as a 13-year-old is you're just trying to fit in. You don't want to stand out. You don't want to be excluded. You're just doing everything that you can just to fit in and feel like you belong. And for me, that was, you know, I was lucky that it was sport. It was cricket. And because I was boarding and I had a great group of friends, some country boys, a lot of them came from Toowoomba Prep into Churchy. And so they all knew each other and they'd all played rugby. And that's where I sort of slowly got introduced to it. And as Waxy mentioned, I was lucky that I had a good set of wheels. So it was always quite fast. And then, I don't know, yeah, so I just, you know, when I was playing cricket, when I was playing rugby, I didn't have to worry about what other people were thinking of me. It was sort of an arena where I could just be Aiden. I could be myself for as long as I was playing the sport for and not worry about, you know, being the darkest kid there or my accent sounding different to other people. I didn't have to worry about all those sorts of things. I was just playing sport and having fun.
We'll get to the rugby in just a second, but in reflection, what would you change if you had to do it all again? That might help someone that's going to be in the same shoes as you, because it seems like there's a lot of PNG players that come over for boarding school. So if there's someone listening, like, what would you change, or what bit of advice would you have for them?
I think it's a really tough question, Waxy. I think being like a lot more proud of where I was from, and I guess it was hard because there weren't many other Papua New Guineans there to, you know, to talk about home and talk about our culture and stuff. But just being more PNG proud there, I think I would do a little bit differently. I sort of erred the other way and I tried to fit into what everyone else was doing. And there are times where, you know, I sort of, I guess, forgot who I actually was. And that's not just boarding school. I think going throughout my whole rugby career as well, there are times where I just lost sight of who Aiden was, and you get a little bit carried away. So I think just really being proud, anchoring myself in my Papua New Guinean heritage and the values that I grew up with, and not losing sight of that. And I think having a role model and an older person there to remind you of those things helps as well. And so finding those people early in life is only a good thing.
Before we get to your rugby union journey, you mentioned representing your culture at a young age. That would be some of your advice. How proud or how much does it mean to you now? You know, we've seen you on the Uncles podcast, we've seen you on David Mead's podcast, and to see, you know, how much does it mean to you to see people like these men represent their cultures and being proud of being from PNG?
Yeah, it's funny you mention it, T, because it's definitely, as I said, it's better late than never, I guess. And I'm just so glad upon retiring, and even before retiring, I felt this pull to come home. And so I had the conversation with my wife and I was like, I think I just need to go back to PNG after rugby. I can't really put my finger on what it was, but it felt right. And what you said was exactly right. I'm extremely proud now. Being at the Reds, I had Will Guinea there, who is a really proud Papua New Guinea. He goes home at every opportunity. But as I sort of spoke about before, I'd sort of just get blinded by things and just get, I guess, sidetracked, or whatever the right word is. I just forget for a second who I was and where I was from. But going back has definitely, I guess, brought a lot of those feelings to the front. And using, I guess, you know, using the little profile and the little platform I have now just to just to help in any way. And I spoke to Wixie when we were up there, and you know, one of the things that I was trying to encourage other young islanders, not just Papua New Guineans, other young islanders. And I see Taniela's done it. He's gone home to Tonga recently. But just get back to your culture, get back to your heritage, and just do all you can to promote, to give back. You know, because the little things do count. And so it's funny. It's gone in a full sort of full 180. I'm back home now. I always have been. I've just never really shown, I guess, the fact that I'm an extremely proud Papua New Guinean.
No, I love that, man. And we got to meet the uncles, the hosts of the podcast there, and they were so excited when you reached out, or however how the communication went behind the scenes feature on their podcast. They absolutely loved you. So it's good to see that everyone's in there helping each other out. But let's go to your rugby journey. You know, coming through, I guess you were the talked about teenager. You had the wheels, you know, through the Aussie schoolboys and 90s or 20s, whatever it was, but fair few injuries along the way before you got to your debut. So I guess there was a bit of a big build up. But you know, what was it like during that period of coming back from a lot of hamstring injuries and trying to get yourself right to get to that debut and, you know, progressing from what you were as a teenager into the Super Rugby?
Yeah, it was an incredibly, I guess, difficult 3 to 4 years. I guess I just expected it all to happen like it was happening to, you know, good mates of mine, Will, Quaid, and then, 19, first ACL, 20, second ACL, 6 or 7 really bad hamstring tears off the back of the second ACL. So it was like I was sort of on hold there for 3 or 4 years, not making any real progress, I guess, career-wise and playing-wise. So it was hard, a lot of times by yourself in rehab. And I guess as a young man, it was extremely difficult to see everyone else progressing with their own careers. And you feel like you're stuck. You start to, you know, why is this happening to me? And the mental side of things gets really quite difficult. But yeah, you know, I managed to make my debut as a 21-year-old. So it was fantastic against the Western Force at Suncorp. We got a win. It was a slow start. I can't help but think, you know, when you retire, one of the natural things you do after you retire is you reflect. And sort of as I reflect, it's like, could things have gone differently? Maybe they could have, but, you know, I'm also a big believer that sort of everything happens for a reason. As a, I guess, 16, 17, 18-year-old, things were sort of, they were coming easy to me, you know, just schoolboys getting contracts and all of that. And so I had to go through those periods to find a different side of things, find a different strength elsewhere. You know, everything's we're all on this journey and you're just trying to grow. And I took learnings out of that I wouldn't have learned otherwise that are really relevant to me these days. So thankful for those injuries and for that time that I went through. Look, and then I managed to play for another 9 years. So really thankful for that. And yeah, now I'm back in PNG. Trying to help out.
You got to play over 50 caps in the Super Rugby. You also got to play in Japan. Were there any opportunities to play for PNG?
Yes, there were. There was one quite early. I was only 19 or something. PNG approached me. I had just played for Aussie Sevens, and so I couldn't because of Rugby Union's bloody eligibility rules. I had already played for the Aussie Sevens team, and one, I couldn't. And at the time, you know, obviously you have the hopes to play for the Wallabies. And if I'd played for PNG, I wouldn't have been able to do that. Because at that time, I held both passports as a 19-year-old. I held both. So I could have played for Papua New Guinea, but, you know, I had bigger aspirations. Mm. When I was 22, I had to give up my PNG passport because they removed the dual eligibility for whatever reason. And then so when I retired in 2021, the opportunity to play for PNG came up again. And I wanted to do it. And they play in I can't remember what it's actually called, but it's against Vanuatu and Solomon Islands. I was going to play in that. It was October 2022. And I came down. I went into camp. They made me the captain, and it was fantastic. And then a day before the tournament, Oceania Rugby were like, hey, has Aiden got the right releases? And I had flagged this with the PNG Rugby admin back then.
Oh, no
I said,
way.
Look, I think there's eligibility criteria, and I think let's look into it. And their advice to me was, oh, you were born here. You've held a PNG passport, so it's all good. And I, you know, silly me took their word for it. And then, and the day before the tournament, it turns out that I wasn't eligible. I didn't have a current PNG passport. And so, the day before, I had to pull out. It was really disappointing. I was more disappointed for the guys because they were all really looking forward to, I guess, taking the field with me. And it would have been incredible. And then it was a little bit embarrassing because I'd spent the whole week building it up, you know, with the private sector, with everyone up there. And I was like, yeah, you know, come on down, 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon, we're playing against, I think the first game was against Vanuatu, and doing all these interviews, really trying to pump the game up, and then I don't even run out to play. So yeah, it was disappointing. But look, I'm 36 in a week, and so there's a little bit of juice left in the legs.
Oh, chances of going again.
I'm not going to make any promises, but I'm working through the dual citizenship now. Hopefully it gets sorted sometime this year. And it looks like PNG Rugby, they've had some of their own issues. And so there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I can't go into it too much. But it looks like if we tick the right boxes, you know, we can be reinstated with Oceania in the next 12 months, and then we'll see.
Sitaliki Tamani, you've played against him before. Yeah. So he was 39 or 40 when he played for Tonga just recently on that against Scotland? So
yeah, you still got plenty of
juice.
Yep.
You still have plenty of juice. You stay fit. My man T, he's very close with Frank Pulitua at Oceania. So we'll get on the phone to him to make sure we push this along, eh?
he's been working really hard behind the scenes to try sort PNG Rugby out.
Perfect. Well, hopefully get that opportunity.
He'll be able to give you the insight, T, as to what's going on.
Perfect. Well, we don't have long to go, but I do really want to finish on you living back in PNG, and you talk about this is like legacy stuff that I believe I got to witness firsthand when you were, I guess, the ambassador or with that Street Smart initiative program. Man, that was one of the best experiences I've ever had last year when we went over there with that Pacific Sports Show and seeing the kids eat their peanut butter sandwiches and get in the brother's jersey, then playing on that field that was like concrete. But just listening to you talk about what it means to help and change kids' lives was inspirational. Like how do you put that into words? Like, you know, now that you've done it for a little bit longer now, on what that means to you.
Yeah, thanks, Wixie. It was a... The Street Smart Initiative, as I said, before I retired, I felt this pull to move back home, move back to PNG. And then it wasn't until I got there, it was like, oh, damn, there is some work that needs to be done. You know, and I guess just driving through the streets every day and just seeing the kids, the lack of opportunity and the lack of care, I think it's the lack of care just that they don't receive. And I was like, man, you know, there's got to be a better way for us to do things. And I think one of the things that you get caught up with in PNG is there's so much that needs to be done, right? You look everywhere, you know, whether it's health or it's education, safety, all of that. There's so much that needs to be done. And so you just got to really narrow it down. It's like, okay, what can I be involved in that I can control? And you can see direct outcomes, tangible outcomes as a result. And so it's like, okay, obviously the background's in rugby. I've been able to travel the world and do this for the last 10 or 12 years. That's my expertise, and that's where I'm going to help. And I was lucky enough to meet the founders of Street Smart Initiative, Mozart and Noel, the words can't even explain how brilliant these guys are. Just hearts of gold. And the thing is, now that I'm sort of in the space, you find these people everywhere now, you know? So it's not until you're actively looking for these things, right? And participating. But Mozart and Noel, and just off their own backs, they were like, we've got to do something. So they live, and their families are from this area, a very notorious area in Port Moresby called Gerahu. It's probably our largest suburb, and lots of criminal activity, just petty crime, lots of drug abuse, alcohol abuse, and just lots of idle youth who are doing nothing. And so they were like, well, we're gonna use rugby, sport, as I guess a social tool. You're gonna get these kids off the street. They didn't even have a program or a competition or anything. It was just like, let's just start a training program for these kids to participate in. And slowly, more and more kids came. I came across them, guys. I'd love to be a part of this. This is exactly something that I've been wanting to be a part of. And so, really, my role is to, one, create these training programs for these kids, bring a bit of structure to what they're doing, improve their skills. But then the larger part of it is outside of actual rugby. So Mozart, the founder, he's a real storyteller and he's great at it. And so after each training session, all the kids are together and then, you know, we spend about 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, however long, just talking about life, talking about what it takes to be a good person, talking about what are the other things that these kids can be involved in. And it's simple things, right? So one of the things that we do on a Saturday morning once a month, we do a big cook-up for these kids. So they get this unreal meal and it's, you know, rice, chicken, veggies and all of that sort of thing. But before we eat, we go around and we clean up around our community. So whether it's through the school, it's just on the streets, you know, and it's just about taking pride in your community, your surroundings. And a lot of it, from my perspective, when I'm talking to the boys, is like, if you boys want to play rugby and you want to be, you know, the rugby team or the rugby player in your community, it comes with a certain responsibility, right? And you want these other kids to see how you're behaving, how you're acting. And if these kids, you know, if they're seeing you clean the streets, they're seeing you help your parents, if they're seeing you help other kids, that's what they're going to want to do, right? Because you're the cool rugby guys, you know, you're the big guys in the area who get to go and play sport and represent your, you know, your circle of friends and your community on the weekend. And so you're inspiring the next generation of kids to come through. And I guess all we're trying to do is just break the cycle. And we're trying to introduce other opportunities for these kids and other things for them to do, you know, otherwise they're just going to be left on the streets. And we know, you know, we know where that life leads.
Dossie, that's unreal, man, to be able to hear you speak about that Street Smart Initiative program. And as I said, like witnessing in that firsthand, it really hit the heart. And I'm glad there's people like yourself and Mozart and those type of people involved in changing the kids' lives, you know, and just giving them basic skills to be able to, you know, hopefully further progress in life. But that brings us to the end, mate. We could talk all day, but absolutely love your work.
We really could.
Absolutely love your work, you know, especially when you said, that bit around not shying away from who you are, like in terms of being from PNG, being proud and representing that wherever you are in the world. So before we finish up, actually, it's just 30 years of Super Rugby is just is what, only a month away, you know, the celebration. They're going to choose
2026, yes.
Yeah, they're going to choose a Legends 15 side. So myself and you, we're potential candidates for that. No, not really. I was only joking. But out of someone you've played with, who do you think deserves a spot in that that starting 15? Nijan player, PNG player, who you probably thinks deserves a spot?
Well, I mean, as a Papua New Guinean, Will Gania has to be right up there in the conversation of nines.
Yeah.
He'll probably – is this Aussie Super Rugby or Super Rugby?
All of Super Rugby.
So. Yeah, well, Will might have – he definitely will be in the conversation. I would say I don't know. That's going to be a really tough
That's going to be tough. Hey? Very tough.
You think but way I think, back.
I think Will Gania is definitely in the conversation for the nines, for sure.
Yeah, I think my Brumbies coach, Bernie Larkin, will be right up there in the conversation.
Over Dan Carter.
Exactly. Then you've got DC. Gitz, who was up in PNG earlier this in 2025, Matt Giddo should be in that conversation as well. Yeah, it depends what the criteria is. Andrew Walker, surely.
Well, there's Jonah Walker's Loma, there's Ma'a Nono, there's Tana Umanga, there's Jerry Collins, there's a plethora. But I think Will Gania, he's definitely in there. So unfortunately,
good luck to whoever's picking that 15.
You're not wrong. But, man, really appreciate it, bro. I really appreciate your time. Wish you all the best in the future, and hopefully you get that cap. We'll be there watching.
I'm on the
watching.
Phone to Frankie right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We'll get that sorted. So hopefully you get that cap for PNG, brother. But much love and all the best.
Appreciate it, gents. Yes, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
It's Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinidar Arona.
Join Jacob McQuire and Michael Chow for Nisha Daily every weekday morning on ABC Radio Australia.
Has anyone described your voice as annoying, Emily?
What are you trying to say, Michael?
Yeah, that's a leading question.
No, sorry. Like,
she came out and said to interviewers, "My family finds my voice annoying."
That's such a family thing to say.
Hey,
yeah,
burn your dreams, keep you attached to the ground,
keep you really, really humble. Nisha Daily, weekday mornings from 7 o'clock PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Hi, it's Tabua Tunukabandra, and you're listening to Nisian Footy.
Give me three answers for this one.
Yes, we are going to run it back for 2026, where we finish the episode with a bit of fun. This is our game of categories. 3 points up for grabs each week. Whoever loses at the end of the year, we need to get to that because last year...
We'll come up with something for next week. We'll come up with our...
Okay,
prize.
Our prize, what we're playing for. But last year we had a tie.
It's always a tie.
But we did take our producers out for lunch and...
It's a good feed.
Yeah, it was good. And good way to end of the year. But I thought this year I'll start with Give Me Three and give you the opportunity to get on the board early. What do you reckon?
I like it. Have you changed your attitude around, you know... Making sure that there is fun
in this game of categories. That's a you problem, mate. So just remember the vibe I'm going for here. It's a bit of fun. Now, have you ever watched Family Feud? Have you watched Family Feud on TV?
I have.
Yes.
Steve Harvey.
Yeah, where they ask 100 people a question and then their answers are all
the
added
top
up.
Answers. Blah, 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 yep.
The top answers. So,
okay, I like where you're going with this.
Instead of going to Mr. Harvey, I've gone to Mr. ChatGPT and I've said ChatGPT has asked 100 people, name something you will definitely hear on Rarotonga.
That you would hear,
like you'd hear through your ears.
Through the ears.
So there's 8 answers here.
You know, you could hear from anywhere else, but
give me give me three of the 8 answers that ChatGPT has.
Okay.
And I actually asked my wife this question. Remember, we've just come home from Rarotonga and she got four straight away.
Okay. I'm just going to go with a simple one, the greeting, kia ora.
Yes.
There we go. I thought that
was number 3 on the list.
That was number 3 on the list. What else would I hear over there? Are you from the Cook Islands? People ask. No, I wouldn't hear that. No.
Okay, I know where you're going with this.
You know what I mean?
So that was your second one. But think noises.
Yes. So think I thought you noises. Meant... People asking what's your last name.
You remember
name
when I said through your ears?
Through your ears.
Yeah, you tried to make a joke of it. Okay. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I don't
what
listen.
Did you hear?
True. Okay, kia ora, and I'm going to hear sound of, what am I going to hear?
You're lying in the ocean.
The ocean. I'm going to hear the sound of the ocean.
So I'll say waves, yep.
The waves. You
hear the waves crashing on the reef.
Yep.
That was number 4. So you got 2 out of the 3.
Am I done?
Yeah. You gave your third one or your second one when you said, are you from the Cook Islands?
Oh, I thought you were saying no.
That was your penalty, mate, for not listening.
I'll take 2 out of 3.
We'll take that.
What else would
anyways,
we hear in the beautiful
one,
Cook Islands?
The top one, and this was a one that they complained, or my aunties complained about early in the morning, the rooster's crowing.
Mate,
roosters
yes.
everywhere.
The Cook Island roosters laying eggs.
The scooters were number 2. Kia ora was 3. The waves on the ocean with 4. You also will hear church singing on a Sunday.
Oh, the beautiful sounds.
The dogs barking. Mate,
the stray dogs.
Everywhere. Yep. The drums. You'll hear Cook Island drums.
The drums.
And the last one that ChatGPT had here was someone's auntie calling out.
Oh, I was going to say the screams of someone getting a hiding, but anyway, that would have been another one for sure. But hey, we are back. That's the first one in the books for 2026. Tell your footy-loving friends about Nisian Footy. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Pacific website. It is great to be back with you, T.
Yes, it is. Good to be back. I'll see you all next Monday. Ka kite. This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.